next hour. Let's welcome back to our program Vicki Kepler-Dodato, who joined us about 6 weeks ago. Vicki, first off, good morning. Thanks for joining us again today.
Good morning, Jeff and Scott, and thank you for another opportunity. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Not too happy about this story. Now, 6 weeks ago, we talked with you about an historic barn down in the Rock Springs area, which I've probably driven past 1,000 times, you know, going up and down that road and so on. And Scott here, I'm a history guy, and so when I first got wind of this story a couple of months ago, I thought, okay, I want to follow up on this. So Vicki, first off, let's start from scratch for folks who have no idea what we're talking about. Maybe tell us briefly something about yourself, and then the Kepler Barn is how it's usually referred to. Tell us about the Kepler Barn and what's the issue. So give us some background again here, please.
Okay, I'll do my best. The Kepler Barn is, as you said, located right off Route 45, and if anyone is familiar with the area, it's the first barn you would see as you're headed toward, if you go to Ag Progress Days, which Penn State sponsors every year in August. So over 100,000 farmers from all over the country show up, and I'll put that on hold and come back to that. But at any rate, it's off that area. What makes the Kepler Barn so significant, and listeners probably already have connected, that's part of my name. So yes, I have a emotional connection to the barn, but I want to give its history, which to me should make it valuable to anyone in the area. Millie Kepler was my great aunt. She married my grandfather's brother, so that's the connection. And our farm, when I say our or my farm, that's meaning the farm I grew up on. My father was Don Kepler, and he was fairly well known in that area for a variety of things. He coached baseball at Penn State, was what was considered a survivalist. He taught the first Peace Corps volunteers there, actually on the Kepler property, and was hired under President Kennedy's administration. And Penn State was the first university in the country to actually teach a course on survival. So I could go on about that, but that's that connection. So the original Kepler farm would have been the farm I grew up on and my Aunt Millie's, and they were adjacent to each other. So I spent a lot of time growing up with four brothers. I spent a lot of time with Aunt Millie just to get away, I should say, as a little girl, from four brothers. So I would go back and forth. Aunt Millie taught me how to ride horses in that barn. She taught me so many things, as you can imagine, what just a farm does, the values it instills, the hard work ethic, etc. But mostly she taught me never, ever to give up and never to accept that because you're a girl, you can't do it. So that's my emotional attachment to that particular property. But the barn itself is on, as I said, the original, what's known as the original Kepler property. And Jacob Kepler, who would be my great-great-great-grandfather, was one of the first settlers in the entire Nittany Valley region. And he brought his family there in the late 1700s. And was looking for farms and eventually bought several hundred acres in the Ferguson Township area, which became known as the Kepler Farms. So the barn, the actual barn, there's some dispute about when it was built, but if you drive by, you'll see the signs on both ends say 1818. Others think it was 1834, but regardless, Jeff and Scott, it's an old historic structure. Mm-hmm. And that alone worth preserving. But it's one of the largest bank barns, 19th century bank barns in the state. And last time I was on, just as an aside, Scott, I loved your story about the your connection to barns. So yes. Hopefully some of your readers or listeners will also share connections to the region, to farming. There's nothing like a farming community. So my background right now is that I have lived in Ohio for several decades. I met my husband and moved here. But I still call it home. I just have to say I go home a lot to State College and the area. But I think that's true for most people. Your heart is where your childhood was. But in Ohio, just to give you background, I'm a trauma therapist licensed in the state. And the reason I bring that up is one of the slides, when I went back and did the power presentation, the PowerPoint, one slide, I had 167 slides, mostly pictures of the history, the barn, Aunt Millie, the family lineage, et cetera. But the one slide that everybody remembered, and I've gotten emails, phone calls about it, was one that I thought at the last minute, you know, I want them to get to understand Millie as a person. I have that emotional connection with her, but unless you knew her, grew up in the area, people wouldn't. And I had the thought, and I had never thought of it, I was going to take her life, what little I knew of it, and put it in the perspective of what would a trauma therapist look at Aunt Millie's life and comment on. And so that's what I did, and I'm just going to share that, if that's okay, and then please move on to other details. So what people don't, frequently they'll read Millie was the mother, she and Aaron had three children, but they actually had four. So keep in mind, I just knew her as a little girl. But now, and through my profession, I sat down one night and I thought, I'm going to see what trauma Millie might have gone through. And one of the first ones was I knew that she had lost a child, not at birth. He lived for several months. So she lost her firstborn son, and his grave is in the Jingle Mill Cemetery. Never heard about it. Just one time I overheard my dad saying, later when Millie's husband died, that that wasn't her first great loss or something, that Millie was used to loss. And I never understood what that was, but the point being, she lost that child. The second loss, and these are what everyone knows about. Who knows what all the, I always call them the hidden losses in people's past. We all have them. But the second one that people in the area would know is that she was widowed at age 33 in 1929 when her husband Aaron died. And obviously that was a shock, a great loss, but the stories that come with that are what compound losses, that's the term we use. And shortly after he was actually buried, a group of local men showed up on her doorstep and offered to buy the barn, appearing to be sympathetic, I'll just say that. Now, obviously, I don't remember any of that. I overheard my dad talking about the story to my mom. But he said that Millie was so incensed that they hadn't even waited, for Aaron. I think his term was he wasn't even cold in the ground before they showed up and offered her, a very low sum of money to take the farm. And Aunt Millie threw them off the property. But not before she had said, now this is family lore, she had pointed to her son Aaron, who at that time was 12, and said, I will never sell this farm. This is my son's future, his inheritance, his destiny. And they offered again up the price. And at that point, now again, whether this is true or not, but when I shared it at the fundraiser, people in the audience that knew Millie laughed and said, now they believe it. But I said, maybe my dad was exaggerating, but at that point she ran them off with a pitchfork. And as I said, people in the audience laughed and said, yep, that she probably did. But the point I'm trying to make in all seriousness is, what a loss, what a trauma that was. But her comment to everything was, and they kept saying, what are you going to do, Millie? And her comment was always, I don't know, but I'll figure it out. And that is ingrained in me 50-some years later. That is, I live by that. What are you going to do? I don't know, but I'll figure it out. And that I got from Aunt Millie. So the next loss was that less than 2 years later, so Aunt Millie and her 12-year-old son Aaron literally took over the barn and the farm and made it and outproduced every male farmer in the area. That's what she was known for. And the bank showed up and foreclosed on the farm for $20,000. Now, when I was researching this story, I looked up what would $20,000 in 1929 be in today's standards, and it was $378,000. Well, here's the other backdrop to the story, so you get an idea of the type of person Aunt Millie was. It would have been almost two more decades till a female could get a loan from a bank legally. And I never even thought of that or knew that or understood. So I'm thinking, here's a woman with her back against the wall in every way, and how is she going to do it? And again, I don't know, but I'll figure it out. She and Aaron and hired hands and her two daughters paid that $20,000 loan off in 5 years, which is beyond unbelievable. And then at age 14, Millie and Aaron were walking across the road, and a car came around the curve. They were on their way to the barn to do chores very early in the morning. And a car came around, and my aunt saw her son, her remaining son, hit and run over by a car and killed. And enough, if that isn't trauma enough, and I know, like I say, because of what I do for a living, I also know how trauma is recorded in the brain and how it stays in the body, et cetera. But not only did she lose a son, which would have been another deep loss, but she held him in her arms as he died, and she saw his death in front of her. Never talked about it that any of us know, really, till the day she died. But I can't imagine that lived with her. And so you just keep going on, and then you realize even more so what a remarkable woman not only she was, but what a remarkable feat she was able to accomplish just by keeping that barn and that farm and setting all the records that she did. She was termed Rosie the Riveter of the Farm World by the United States Department of Agriculture during the war. State of Pennsylvania voted her agriculture queen in honor of her accomplishments. And I think you can tell, Jeff and Scott, I could go on and on, but Aunt Millie definitely was not just a role model for me, but for all female farmers particularly, and earned the respect of the male farmers, not just in that area, but in the state. So that's my homage, tribute to my Aunt Millie. And if you ask me anything else, I have lots of information.
That is a wonderful tribute and an amazing woman.
That's quite a story.
Yep.
I mean, holy mackerel. Now, I'll tell you what, Vicki, can you hold on? We're going to take a commercial break here so we can stay on our schedule, but we want to talk with you again, get an update on where things are, because right now, from what I understand, you've got some more long odds, apparently, staring at you. So if you would, just hold on the phone there, Vicki, for a few minutes. Folks, we got to take a break here. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox, and we'll return with more right after this.
From State College, Lock Haven, and Bellefonte, Central PA Sports Authority, Sports Radio 98.7, The Fox.
Sports Radio 98.7, The Fox.
Let Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox make you a winner this summer with our Summer Splash Contest with Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall. This Father's Day weekend, The Fox will be giving away a spacious hot springs hot tub during a Bellefonte cruise at Talleyrand Park in downtown Bellefonte. Stop by these fine locations and get signed up to become a qualifier for the contest. Dottery Equipment, Route 64 in Mill Hall. Fisher's Market at the Y in Milesburg. And at Clearwater Pools and Spas in Center Hall.
The 36th Annual Historic Bellefonte Cruise is Friday, June 13th and Saturday, June 14th in downtown Bellefonte, Central Pennsylvania's largest car show. Get all the details on the fun, food, activities, and live entertainment. Visit BellefonteCruise.org or call 814-280-5881. Sponsors include the Happy Valley Adventure Bureau, Five Star Mitsubishi, Wetzler Funeral Home, Sleep In and Comfort Suites, Carson Disposal, Best Line Power Sports, and WTAJ.
Have you checked out our new website, 987thefox.info? When you do, be sure to scroll to the bottom, enter your email address. Then sometime soon, you'll be a 987 The Fox Insider with our newsletter feature, thoughts from some of our hosts that you won't get on our shows, messages from sponsors, and even special deals as an Insider newsletter exclusive. We'll take good care of your email address, no sharing or selling. Hope you'll join us on 987thefox.info and enter your email address at the bottom. Be an Insider, only from 987 The Fox.
Hey, how you guys doing? Welcome to XYZ Printing.
My son's soccer team is looking for new jerseys.
Well, I can do that.
Something in green with white lettering.
No problem at all. Right here in this box.
Those are white shirts.
Not for long.
Just because someone says they make custom t-shirts doesn't mean they're from Panth.
What's the name of Yoon's team up there?
The Tigers.
Is that with one G or two?
For quality you can see and wear, remember PAMP for customized t-shirts, letterheads, envelopes, magnetic signs, and business cards. PAMP has a low minimum of 12 shirts for printing and no minimum on embroidered items. They don't charge art fees or setup fees. Pricing is simple and easy, and they have a quick turnaround. They're open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located at 136 South Harrison Road, Pleasant Gap. For more information, call 814-359-2447.
If you're like me, you have neighbors that have zero-turn mowers, and some are satisfied and others not so much. I've had neighbors come over while I'm mowing with my Kubota and want to try it out. I told Bob and Clyde, you need to get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64, for Kubota. I have a Z200 25 horsepower with the simplest operation and a pristine cut every time. Even though I have a lawn and, shall we say, a challenging bank, ditch, and of course the wife's ornamental bushes. If you're trying to decide on a great lawn care machine, get to Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. At Daughter Equipment, they're experts on Kubota lawn care machines that keep you moving quickly and efficiently. Your destination for Kubota is Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64. You may even meet my neighbors, Bob and Clyde.
Your sports radio!
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
98.7 The Foxy Knowledge.
It's Let's Talk here on a Thursday morning. Jeff and Scott with you. Again, some open phone time coming up a bit later this very hour.
All right, another segment with Vicki Kepler-Dodato talking about the historic Kepler Barn, which is down in the Rock Springs area, south of State College. Whatever the exact year is, we're talking about a 200-year-old barn. And, yeah, Vicki, when we had you on 6 weeks ago, I shared my barn story of sorts. The property that my wife and I own right now used to have a round barn on it, which unfortunately fell down about 40 years ago. So when it comes to barns, I'm a little bit of a soft spot there. So let's zoom forward now to today. All right, the barn is now owned by Penn State. It's on Penn State ground, Rock Springs, that whole area down there. The barn's been in some disrepair. Penn State has kind of thrown down the gauntlet, if you will, to you and others. Let's talk about that. What is the challenge involving the barn right now?
Okay. So for I believe that Penn State purchased the property in 2006, and not through the Kepler family. Other individuals had owned it. And since then, I'll just say this. It has been in a state of disrepair. Others kept it pristine, you know, up to standards, really took good care of it. There was a storm a few years after the time of the purchase in which parts of the barn blew off, and it was never repaired, and to this day isn't. So you can imagine what not just years, decades of rain does to a barn, and dampness and rot. So it is not in the best shape. However, we've worked on this for 5 years, working with architects, surveyors, I could go on and on, trying to get a cost a way to preserve it. Last time I was on, we talked about the Amish. I've since been in touch with a group called Barnwood Builders, and they actually have their own TV show, and they not only repair and restore old barns, but if they can't be restored, they will dismantle it so that that barn, the best features of the barn, could live on in another barn, which, if it comes to that, I mean, I don't even want to think about the barn being demolished, but if it comes to that, obviously that's where my vote is, that at least they preserve the historic features of it so that someone else who appreciates the history, the possible connection to the Underground Railroad, all of it, that that could live on somewhere else. But in February, Penn State, after, you know, many, many years of Zoom calls, meetings, et cetera, I finally said, just, you know, call our bluff, basically. And so they did. In February, they gave us the go-ahead or permission from their end to go public. And so that's when we held the public fundraiser at the end of March. And they gave us 3 months from the time they notified us to raise $500,000. And that if we raised $500,000, they would stabilize the barn. So it is a daunting task, I believe, as you can imagine. And from the outset, people are saying, well, you know, are you crazy? What are you doing? But again, I go back to the story I shared before the break about my aunt, when people said, what are you going to do? And we all said, I don't know, but we'll figure it out. But this is something we've worked for so many years that finally, all I can say, Jeff and Scott, is we're going to give it our best shot, and that's what we're doing. So we've worked with Preservation PA to make a way for people. Excuse me, because when you donate, this is an unusual situation. We have a deadline. If we don't raise the money, then what happens to the money people have sent in? So we've worked it out so that people can donate, and if we don't meet the goal, they can get their money back minus a 5% handling fee through Preservation PA. But that way they can get a tax deductible donation. It's all covered and accounted for legally through the IRS, all of that. So we're very grateful that Preservation PA took that on with us in partnership. And I also want to thank the Historic Barn and Farm Foundation. I call them HBFF. They have been amazing through this whole thing. And their president, Priscilla De Leon, has been involved for years in her group. So it's not just a few people. There are many, many people in the Center County Historical Society, Marianne Sorensen. There's a lot of people. And the preservation in Pennsylvania that's connected with the Underground Railroad research, Randolph Harris. So we've got lots of people, I hate to say, cheering us on from the sidelines, but basically what we need is a barn, what we call a barn champion. And I know they're out there. We read all the time of particularly Penn State alumni that donate $5 million here, $10 million. I just got my Penn Stater magazine. It goes out to over 114,000 alumni. We're the largest in the world. And someone out there surely is looking for some place to donate. And so we're trying to focus on the Kepler Barn as a project very worthy, if you're a Penn State alum or if you're a farmer or a businessman, to help save this barn, and not just as a showpiece to drive by, but it could pay for itself. We've given Penn State a list of a multitude of uses for it, whether it's a museum, whether it could be hold farm equipment, agriculture equipment, their 4-H, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, all those things have approached us. It could be used, you know, for Grange to teach students. We've even looked at the departments of agriculture, preservation, architecture at Penn State, which all have degrees, that they could use it as a teaching facility for their interns, you know, put them on the research for the Underground Railroad, the Department of History. So there are a lot of creative ideas that we have. But I want to go back to one thing in my research was that, and most people may know this, but when the Kepler family came in the late 1700s, they formed the first pioneer settlement in 1801, long before there was a Penn State or a state college or really any town in the area. And that was well over 50 years before, in 1855, Penn State was founded as the first land-grant agricultural institution in the state. And their motto at the time was making life better, and they had a seal. The Penn State seal has the words on it that say virtue, liberty, and independence. And I love that motto, the significance of it, but I'm using that to appeal to the community and to say, well, what better way do farms make life better for everyone in the region? And they do provide liberty and independence, virtue, you know, with all that as your backdrop. Personally, and I am a Penn Stater and a very loyal and proud one, and I want to make that clear. But having said that, I personally cannot understand why the university would not back this project with their origins and showcase it for farmers everywhere. And the last thing, I know you were being so generous with your time, but I did want to mention about the Underground Railroad connection, and there's a lot I could say. We probably don't have the time, but one of the amazing things is articles have gone out and broadcasts like this. I'm hearing from people all over the country that are sending me in wonderful just tidbits of information, but one was some articles about, and I think he's a distant cousin. I can't figure out exactly. I know we're related. We come from the same great-great-great-grandfather. But Aaron Kepler, who was born and lived on that farm, and my own father, in fact, was born in that farmhouse in 1909 when it was a log cabin. And that's the house in the barn across the road where they believed the slaves were hidden until they could either be taken over the mountain to Huntington or to Pine Grove Mills. And again, that's another story. But we're able to locate a memoir of Aaron Conrad Kepler, and the documents that he fought for the Union under General George McClellan, and actually fought during the Civil War in the seven-day battle near Richmond, and where he was severely wounded. A bullet tore all the way through his right leg, and he was left for dead on the battlefield. I'm reading the article. He laid there Friday afternoon, all day Saturday, all day Sunday through Monday, and when finally Confederate soldiers found him alive and took him prisoner. He was held prisoner in Virginia 23 straight days with no medical aid, and then was finally released through an exchange. Well, Aaron's grandfather was Jacob Kepler, who came to the region. So later, in his own memoir, which was located, he talked about fighting at the Battle of Cold Harbor, Virginia, which I looked up, and that was May 31st, 1864 to June 12th, 1964, which means he went back into war after being released as a prisoner. But in that memoir, he writes, "I am returning to the Kepler farm, and I am bringing people with me." Hmm. And again, that is not proof, but of all the stories my brothers and I grew up with, and I have actually played in the hidden tunnels in the Kepler farmhouse. My brother was in the ones, the secret ones that are actually in the barn. And I wish we had more time, but I could go on and tell you my stories as a little girl. Of course, I didn't know about the Civil War. I didn't know about slaves. To me, it was just a fun place where I could hide, get away from sure. my cousins and, you know, that kind of thing. But when Aunt Millie found me the one day, that is the firmest and most scared I ever was of her. And she never explained. She just said, "Don't you ever, ever go in here again." And I could tell she was upset. But now, as a mother and a grandmother, I realize she was more frightened that I could have fallen down through the through the tunnels and been injured. But but that made an impact on me, and I never went into that wall again.
All right, now Vicki, how much money have you raised so far?
We don't have exact numbers, but I know it's less than 50,000, so we're not even at 10%. But what I love about that is when you think of that, but that is local people, $50 here, $100 there, $500. There were two or three or four people that sent in $1,000. That actually blesses us in some ways more than, I mean, we need the big money. But my point is, it's a lot of people who have sent in what they could afford.
Yeah.
But obviously, if we'd had 5 years, Scott, maybe we could have gotten to 500,000, but we have less than 3 months. So what we really need is a barn champion.
Now, what deadline has Penn State given you again?
They gave us until June 1st. We are asking for it to be extended past Ag Progress Days, which is mid-August, because over 100,000 people will be driving by the barn.
Yeah.
We've also asked for them to put up a sign, which they originally verbally said yes to, but it has not been put up as of yesterday, I know. At any rate, that it would get a lot of attention if we could just have it extended past Ag Progress Days. So I know it's a big task,
I mean, folks, some common sense here. First off, Penn State, you know as well as I do, it doesn't cost $500,000 to fix up a barn. Okay, that's the part of the story, Vicki, that I get maybe angers me the most. I know that's not the case. Now, I mentioned when we had you on before, I live out in Amish country. Amish mm-hmm. carpenters and barns are like peanut butter and jelly. I mean, it's like they go together. I bet if you said like $60,000, I bet if you gave Amish $60,000, they'd fix up that barn just fine. Have you pursued that at all or asked anybody about that?
We have. When I say we, that involves a lot of us working on this. I'm from Ohio, which is high Amish. The county next door to me is one of the largest Amish settlements. I've been in touch with people here who are willing to actually, the Amish, and when they say drive, they don't drive. They can be driven, but they were actually going to take their buggies and their I don't even know how they do it, but they are willing to do that from here. Then the people that are working on it, Pennsylvania, I think 2 years ago, actually got in touch with a group of Amish over in the Huntington area. And the point being, they were willing to do it for free. And we did approach Penn State with that and let them know that. What we were told, I'm not sure I understand, but I understand it's a legal issue. I understand there's liability. They would have to sign waivers, et cetera. But because of union wages or whatever contracts Penn State has as a university, I know that they have legal ramifications that they have to follow. And that was not, for whatever reason, that could not be done. And yes, it's heartbreaking, more than heartbreaking when you realize that there are, it wouldn't take them 6 months to a year. They would do it fast and do it well.
All right, to wrap up here, Vicki, if somebody just heard this story, maybe for the first time, and they somehow want to donate, they want to be a part of this, how do they do that? Give folks some ideas on how they can assist.
Okay, there are two ways. And I'm going to give you both. I'm going to read it. Preservation Pennsylvania is the group that is, working with the money or putting it in reserve. And their address, I'm going to read, you can go online or you can mail it. So the mailing address is 1230 North 3rd Street, Suite 1, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17102, and I'll read it again, 1230 North 3rd Street, Suite 1, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17102, and that organization is Preservation Pennsylvania, and they have a website, so I would assume they can just go to Preservation Pennsylvania's website, look for, they have many, many projects, so you might have to scroll through or look for the Kepler Barn. There is also a Facebook page called Save the Kepler Barn, that has articles. We'll have preservations linked to the website. So that might be an easier route for some folks, but on Facebook, Save the Kepler Barn. And if anyone has any questions, wants to get in touch with me, they can feel free to contact me via email. It's D-O-T-K, so .K, D-O-T-K-7 at AOL.com, and I'd be glad to talk with them. So I cannot, again, tell you how much I appreciate your generosity with your airtime. And thank you so much. But the days are counting down, about 2 weeks from now.
Unless
an extension. Yes.
I tell you what, I'm looking at the website, preservationpa.org, and right pretty much near the top it says, Help Save the Kepler Barn, and there's a link there to learn more. All right?
Okay. Well,
so, you know, most folks navigate the internet anymore. So, preservationpa.org, just, you probably don't even have to scroll down. It's right there. Help Save the Kepler Barn. And there's a Learn More link. So, if you want to get some more information there. Vicki, we've got to take a break and move on. But I tell you what, thank you again for your time.
Very much.
You got two guys definitely behind you here. Please keep me up to date on progress, especially with this potential looming deadline here in about 2 weeks.
Thank you, Jeff and Scott, so much, and your listeners.